10 years had passed since I'd seen my father. When we finally pulled up to that VA housing in Sarasota, I froze in the passenger seat, watching this man 40 pounds heavier than my memory. My husband spotted him first. I managed only a distant hug. What do you do when your own father feels like a stranger? We'd flown all the way from Alaska so my 6 children could meet their 84-year-old grandfather, though I'd already warned the older ones not to expect conversation. Later at the beach, I tried asking about his past, but his answers evaporated like sea spray, his eyes always drifting toward the horizon. This disconnect between what family is supposed to be and what it actually is, that's the territory we're entering. Not the sanitized version where everyone gathers for holidays with genuine warmth, but the messier truth many of us live with. Parents who weren't capable of the love we needed, who wounded us through action or absence, who left scars we're still learning to name. There are countless ways to flee. My sister Lori climbed out her bedroom window at 15, running 2 miles to a friend's house night after night, always returning before dawn, until the night she didn't come back. William left home to escape his volatile mother. Vonnie married at 19 just to get out. Randy disappeared into anorexia and obsessive exercise. Lisa cut off all contact with the father who abandoned her. I thought Alaska would be far enough, 5,000 miles from my childhood. At 20, I walked down the aisle alone, finding it almost scandalous to involve parents. Duncan and I would build something new in the wilderness. But distance doesn't work that way. The past has long arms. Dina had panic attacks during ordinary tasks. Vonnie's marriage collapsed into alcoholism. Lisa brought suspicion into her own marriage, certain her husband would eventually leave like her father did. We're not running from our parents, we're running from ourselves, from the memories that form who we are. Then come moments that pierce our defenses. Mother's Day cards that never fit your story. A tender parent-child scene in a movie that makes you cry for reasons you can't articulate. When a college president asked about my father, I answered with brutal honesty about his failures. His frozen smile told me I was being judged, not for my character, but for my father's. Eventually, the phone rings. Vonnie's sister called to say their mother was dying and wanted to see her. Despite 20 years of separation, Vonnie went. Her dying mother whispered, "I shouldn't have been so hard on you." Then she cried. That moment began Vonnie's healing, not because her mother's apology was enough, but because Vonnie finally stopped running. My father was 88 when he left the Jefferson Center after 13 years. His room was cluttered with newspapers and ashtrays, debris of a solitary life sustained by coffee, cigarettes, and ice cream. In my memories, he's always leaving, a traveling salesman being fired, frequently vanishing. He lived with his parents until 30, married my mother through a cycling club, dreamed of being a writer, but never wrote. 20 years ago, a rare letter arrived. He'd read the New Testament and asked forgiveness. I cried bitterly for days. I'd never thought to pray for him. A year later, he returned all the books I'd sent. Don't call me daddy anymore. Don't talk to me about God. I write this as confession, not for sympathy. When we confess the sins of our fathers and mothers, our words align with lived truth rather than wishful thinking. Biblical writers weren't afraid of honest lament. David, Moses, even Jesus acknowledged life's real conditions. Then my sister Lori revealed our father had sexually abused her for years. I was stunned. Yet 2 years later, we took his arm at a Florida condo, smiling as if he'd been good to us. Confession requires courage to speak what actually happened, not what should have happened. The hardest work is seeing our parents as people separate from the harm they caused. Visiting my father's brother, I discovered my father had always been a loner, failing at everything, navigation school, clerical work, sales jobs. At a family reunion, he remained uncomfortable and nearly silent, unable to connect even with his grandchild. The realization hit me. He is not loved, and he himself will not or cannot love. My anger shifted to something more complex. I saw that my father suffered from the suffering of being unable to love. Diana avoided her mother for years due to unpredictable behavior, communication cutoffs, affairs, suicide attempts. When she examined her mother's childhood, she realized her mother had likely been sexually abused. This understanding didn't excuse the harm, but created space for sympathy. Michelle's father repeatedly knocked her unconscious when she came home drunk as a teenager. After 15 years of estrangement, her sister's death brought them back together. Michelle saw her father's humanity, his suffering, sacrifice, struggles raising 9 children while working demanding jobs. Their reconciliation culminated in a tender moment when he touched her face lovingly and said, "I love you too." He died the day after their final visit, wearing the Coast Guard belt buckle she'd given him. Yet we rarely consider the cost of not forgiving. William sits in my kitchen describing his rageful mother who screamed constantly. His face stiffens when I mention forgiveness. I know we're called to forgive, but I never thought about forgiving her. I'm married now, hardly see her, and it doesn't hurt, so I don't need to forgive. My brother Todd and I share lunch memories of childhood poverty, the rare chicken we'd gnaw to the bone, going to bed hungry, wearing ugly hand-me-downs that invited mockery, all shaped by a father who refused suitable work. We'd been bitter and angry, walking past him for decades. To choose unforgiveness is to choose vengeance, telling their secrets, refusing help, withholding ourselves, eroding reputations, all attempts to ease our pain by making others pay. Watching my aging father at rehab, I saw helplessness mirrored in another resident's rage against restrictions. The prodigal son's story reveals forgiveness's essence. A young man demanded his inheritance early, essentially declaring his father dead, then squandered everything. Starving and feeding pigs, he returned hoping only for servant status. But while still far off, his father saw him, ran with arms outstretched, and embraced him before he could finish confessing. This father is God himself, running to welcome errant children home. The older brother refused to celebrate, angry at undeserved mercy. Like Jonah, blind to all he'd received. When Peter suggested forgiving 7 times, Jesus answered 77 times, removing all accounting. He told of a servant forgiving an unpayable debt who then refused to forgive another's small debt. Our debt's cancellation cost 2 trees, a hammer, iron spikes, torn flesh, God's son. Before dying, Jesus said, "It is finished," an accounting term meaning paid in full. Unable to speak, my father listened as I read Isaiah. Asked what held him back from faith, he painfully wrote, "Trust." Everything I did for him that trip, he'd never done for me. Yet the harsh accountant's voice in my head began quieting. When do we stop expecting our parents to pay for childhood disappointments? The command to honor parents challenges us when they've abandoned or hurt us. My father left when I was 12, emptying our bank account. Jimmy's Chinese father beat him for failures and maintained years of silence after Jimmy married without permission. Yet when his parents visited 12 years later, Jimmy chose generosity. As soon as they stepped toward us, we moved toward them. Though his father never said, "I love you," Jimmy cared for him through his final illness, finding healing through honor. We're called to respect our parents not for their character, but their position. God chose these particular people to give us life. Honor is action toward the good of the other, manifesting differently for each person. Larry called his abusive mother to ask forgiveness for his bitterness. Dina entered therapy. Randy honored her controlling father by establishing boundaries. Learning my father likely had schizoid personality disorder brought relief. It wasn't our fault. My siblings and I gathered after 16 years, offering our best chair, food, and multiplied love without requiring what he couldn't provide. Boundaries preserve relationships by preventing dishonor. They're loving ways of saying no, not now, not here. As parents age and approach death, we often hope for acknowledgement. Jesus modeled blessing over curses. Even from the cross, he forgave his executioners. Vonnie forgave her abusive mother with Alzheimer's, comforting her as she died. Gail spoke forgiveness to her unconscious schizophrenic father, saying words she didn't yet feel but knew she needed to speak. Deanna found unexpected love when her harsh father's vulnerability allowed connection never before possible. My final visit with my emotionally absent father ended without acknowledgement or goodbye. When death approaches, there's an opening where we glimpse eternity and what truly matters. Being present matters more than perfect words. 3 months after our father died, my siblings and I returned to Florida. We walked a quiet beach, carrying ashes, sharing memories, acknowledging both good and difficult parts of his life. We scattered his ashes into the ocean he loved. Like Joseph, facing the brothers who betrayed him, we stand at a crossroads. Joseph comforted them. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here. It was to save lives that God sent me. Vonnie forgave her sadistic father, though she doesn't know if he's alive. Kevin released his abandoning family from judgment. In Sierra Leone, Sar publicly forgave Numa, his childhood friend forced to kill Sar's father and cripple Sar himself. When I began caring for my father, I couldn't imagine any positive outcome. I initially sought forgiveness only for my own freedom, but I discovered something larger, stepping down from the judge's bench and transferring my father from my judgments to God's. Forgiveness is powerful enough to break generational sins and open our hearts to others' suffering. Like Joseph, many were forced into unwanted situations, but God can use what was intended for evil for good. While forgiveness doesn't require the offender's remorse, we must move forward because it's right for us and the world beyond us. Though imperfect, every act of forgiveness echoes God's own, pointing toward the day when our forgiveness will sparkle in its full splendor. This is the inheritance we choose, not the wounds passed down, but the healing we pass forward.